Welcome to People Power and Politics. Hard talk, riveting interviews, community updates, in-depth analysis. That's People Power and Politics. We tell it to you as it is. No holds barred. You are the people. You have the power. We bring you the politics. To listen to our podcast, be a guest, or to advertise, visit www.pppradio.nyc. That's www.pppradio.nyc.
A very warm welcome to everyone. We are joined by a very special guest, El Paso, Texas-based Kathleen Campbell Walker, a former national president and general counsel of the American Immigration Lawyers Association, ALA, and Board of Governors member. Immigration Practice Group Chair Dickinson Wright, Kathleen is internationally recognized as a thought leader for the breadth of her experience in immigration law and policy. She is a problem solver for complex and difficult immigration challenges. In her role at ALA, she also testified on immigration law and policy before U.S. congressional committees and state legislative committees. Welcome. Such an honor to have you here with us today.
Well, thank you so much, Pearl. It's an honor to be with you. Thank you for the opportunity.
You're very welcome. So, can you share your perspective on the current state of the immigration crisis and the key factors contributing to the surge in migrants at the U.S.-Mexican border?
Of course. I'll try to make some sense of it. It's very difficult to come up with a short response as to why we are where we are at the moment. But to me, the big issue is we have a convergence of really challenging issues. It's sort of a perfect storm. So over the past, I would say, almost 20, 25 years, we've needed to have reforms to our current dysfunctional immigration system to connect the dots between economic needs of the country and how we're going to use the immigration system properly to fill them. So we haven't been able to figure that out. And on top of that, more recently in the past 5 years, we've had a variety of countries from Central and South America, and more recently the crisis in Venezuela in particular, that have caused people to do what they do when you have an impossible situation going on and you need to provide for your family or yourself, and that is you're trying to seek a better opportunity. I know that y'all are in New York and you have that Statue of Liberty there. This is what the United States has been recognized for years. It's a symbol of hope for many. So we have that going on, that additional pressure more so than ever in the past at a critical juncture where our immigration laws just are stretched to the brink and beyond because they cannot address the problem. So that's kind of my summary on why we are where we are.
Okay, so looking at the various factors which contribute to the surge, some of which you mentioned, including violence, poverty, and climate change, how are these factors interacting and what can be done to address the root causes of migration, in your opinion?
Well, that's a great academic question, but let me try to hit it in this way. So first of all, when we're dealing with people that are seeking refuge, we have our asylum laws. And for those, for example, from the Ukraine, when you're in the middle of a war and we create a mechanism, which was a very smart mechanism that was created to allow people to come from the Ukraine and be able to receive, basically, it's like a parole program. And that allows you to come to the United States. It's a little different than going and waiting, in some cases, for years to be able to come to the United States as a refugee. And we have limits on the number of refugees that are received in the United States and processed. So the Ukrainian approach with the parole was an innovative one. And in addition to that, what the Biden administration has done is tried to create a program in some of these countries that are you know, experiencing such extreme poverty, displacement, lack of rule of law to rely upon, to be able to apply to come to the United States from their country of origin versus coming across hundreds, thousands of miles trying to get into the United States at a land border. So there are things that have been done proactively recently that have been good. But as far as how do we address in the future, what is the U.S. response to economic failure, legal failure, when you might not meet the threshold of qualifying for asylum? Because having seeking economic security has not been the focus of our asylum laws in the past. So where are we going to go in the future with that? But we have other ways to address that from an immigration perspective. We could create mechanisms that would be used to address economic types of national security concerns. So, for example, if we need unskilled, and that's an immigration term on how you categorize people who have less than 2 years of experience, education, or training coming to the U.S., why don't we have a way to address flows to address particular economic migration needs? So if I need someone to be able to help me in a mechanical way in an industry, or I need someone for agricultural support or whatever it may be, why can't we connect the dots and create a legal mechanism that works now? And we just don't have it.
And that leads me to my next question, because you mentioned the Biden administration facing challenges in managing the immigration crisis. And, you know, this has been an ongoing issue with every administration. So what are your thoughts on the effectiveness of the policies and measures taken to address the situation?
You know, what we're doing is a Band-Aid approach, a workaround, because we can't seem to get Congress to have the, maybe it's just plain old guts, and will to address the complexity of the immigration issue. I mean, nobody's going to be in agreement on anything totally, and that's just the truth for any kind of legislative change typically. And immigration in particular has been a political football throughout history. So to me, what we're doing is we're trying to figure out any way that we can push an interpretation for immigration to try to help a situation. And on top of that, we're experiencing tremendous backlogs created from the pandemic at our consular posts, for example, where you can wait, you know, in some cases, over a year or more just to immigrate as a spouse of a U.S. citizen right now, which to me is really egregious. So I think that the administrations are ineffective because they can't do their job, which is work with Congress, push them to work together and create solutions. From a legislative perspective, there's only so much you can do without actually creating a new law that makes sense based on our current facts. And that's where we just keep banging our heads against the wall, you know?
Because the immigration laws are outdated.
Absolutely.
So you have testified before U.S. congressional committees and state legislative committees. How have the recent changes in immigration policies, both in the U.S. and abroad, influenced the patterns and number of migrants currently seeking entry into the United States?
So let me make sure I understand the question. Mm-hmm. So as far as you're talking about how these administrative changes or policy changes potentially impacted migratory flows to the United States? Is that, right? Okay, got it. So I think that as you place people in, when we're talking about what's happening here along the Texas border, for example, right now, and California, et cetera. What you have is these additional pressures we discussed earlier from the economic insecurity of Central and South American countries, political unrest, lack of rule of law. You have people in an extremely desperate situation. And so because of that pressure, and we have in some circumstances when people have presented themselves at the border, the land border now is a way to see if I can potentially gain work authorization. And I think that people are being taken advantage of. They're being given information that is inaccurate about how it works. They'll see maybe stories on the internet or a friend in WhatsApp, who knows, saying, hey, I got in and I got work authorization. And people are being sold the very tantalizing option of hope that if I just make it to the border, I'm going to be able to somehow gain work authorization. That is a fallacy. And so I think that some of these policies that do allow humanitarian considerations and some form of relief in limited circumstances are being really blown out of proportion, and people are being taken advantage of. So that's where I think there is a connection between, yes, the United States is trying to do something in a humanitarian way in a limited circumstance based on what laws they can apply and what policies they can create. But that's not the same as the door's wide open. And unfortunately, I think due to the severe situation that people are facing, they're willing to take the risk.
Okay. So looking at perceptions, how do public perceptions and potential misconceptions about the immigration crisis impact policy discussions and decision making? What role do you think education and communication can play in shaping public opinion?
I'm trying to synthesize thoughts into something nice and short, and it's, as usual, kind of a complicated mess to address. So, first of all, what you're trying to do is not have the U.S. public perceive that immigrants are somehow, you know, a threat to security, threat to their jobs, a threat to the economy. And unfortunately, when you have a large number of people presenting themselves at the border or being all of a sudden present in New York, because New York has a very, city of New York in particular, of course, has a very generous approach to providing shelter and assistance to people seeking help, immigrants in this circumstance. So when you have that generous policy and then a fact pattern that you didn't believe would happen, that's where pressure comes to bear and the policy of generosity turns into, I need to protect myself. This is crazy. This is not what we anticipated. So I think that public education is extremely important to help the public try to put pressure on their legislators. Look, here is why we are placed in this situation. Here are the options that we can consider to implement and still keep what we believe in as our basis, which is, yes, you know, the United States is a humanitarian nation, but we are also a nation of rule of laws. So I think it's important to have outreach through the State Department as to what is and is not available. I think it's important to have proper funding and staffing for Customs and Border Protection. If we need to have, and we do, a separate branch of Customs and Border Protection or something else within the Department of Homeland Security, a different agency set up, where you're just focused on dealing with humanitarian evaluation and concerns and outreach to the public, United States, as well as to the world through our State Department contra posts. We need to get that done and be consistent in that message. and work together to create a cooperative arrangements, a cooperative agreements, an international or national agreement about how we're going to address economic migratory flows. And we don't have that yet. We just don't.
Okay, which leads me to my final question. Looking beyond immediate challenges, what long-term solutions do you envision for addressing the root causes of migration and establishing a more sustainable and humane immigration system?
Great question. Well, we've already talked about it. Number one, in the future, we have to connect the economic needs of the United States, which are also national security needs, regarding our labor force. And if we have that need established legitimately, and as in the past, foreign nationals can legally help us fill gaps in staffing of a variety of different positions, we ought to be using that outlet effectively. And right now we're not. So number one, overhaul the immigration system, period. Stop the idiocy that we are now addressing, because we just don't have a logical option within law. And we don't operate outside of law in the United States, at least we're trying not to. So we need to actually pull up our sleeves and work on it and get it done. And that's a congressional action that has to happen with pressure from the public. So as far as what else can we do about migratory flows that right now we're seeing based on, you know, just economic chaos within nations, that's where, you know, our State Department and international organizations help us in outreach. The U.S. can't fix everybody's problems, but we can sure try to do what we can. And that's where I think that you can provide as much outreach and investment in foreign countries that we can, that makes sense, to be able to support our objectives internationally. We can't just hide in a bunker regarding what's going on in the rest of the world, which is obvious based on thousands of people still seeking help from the United States because they believe that that's where you go, to a humanitarian nation that gives them the hope of a new life. So we just need to make some hard decisions and be clear on what the objective is in the future, and then do the public outreach we discussed. That's a starting point.
All right. So, Kathleen Campbell-Walker, we want to thank you so much for sharing your insight, your experience, your knowledge with us. And we certainly look forward to having you back again.
I really appreciate having the opportunity. Thank you so much.
You're so welcome.
People Power and Politics. Hard talk, riveting interviews, community updates, in-depth analysis. That's People Power and Politics. We tell it to you as it is. No holds barred. You are the people. You have the power. We bring you the politics. To listen to our show, be a guest, or to advertise, visit www.pppradio.nyc. That's www.pppradio.nyc.